The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network.
Well, good evening. I'm Scott Ellsworth, your guest host for tonight. Vina is off.
Tonight we have got a great speaker. Jay Redding is a friend of mine. He's a seasoned real estate and mortgage note investor. He's got more than 20 years of hands-on experience building cash flow across multiple strategies. His background includes he's completed over 100 fix and flip transactions, owning and managing up to 45 single-family home rentals, and investing in tax liens. I've done that too, private lending, self-directed IRAs, and mortgage notes. Today, Jay focuses on helping real estate investors structure smarter exits by creating quality installment sale and mortgage notes that perform. Key is perform. And that note buyers actively seek, because you want note buyers to actively seek it in the secondary market. His approach helps investors recapitalize, improve liquidity, and continue growing their business while building long-term predictable income. So I'm going to welcome Jay. Jay, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic, Scott. Great to talk with you here. Great to I noticed that Vina's voice has just kind of gone a little lower here. So
yeah, Vina's voice has gone lower, but you'll have to do with that. So
we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it. That's fine.
Gotcha. And just so the audience knows, if you have questions, call in at 877-772-9658, or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com if you have questions. So we are going to talk tonight about how to do seller financing right. So Jay, just give us a little bit. I know we did that with the intro with your background, but how did you really get started in this market with real estate and note investing?
Actually, I did my first deal back in 2004, went full-time in 2007, and was on the real estate side for quite a while. And my son-in-law actually got us involved on the mortgage note side, and we kept our rentals. We still have 38 rentals now that we still have. But as you get older, okay, you're not able to do physically quite as much. And also my son-in-law, his name's Kyle, basically a two-man operation. He didn't want to necessarily be dealing with rentals the rest of his life. So,
understandable.
Yeah, understandable. Absolutely. He's a smart man. So my daughter did well in that respect. So, so he got interested in notes, and we've been note investing. We got involved in 2019, and that has become our full-time focus now. That's what it is as of today.
That is awesome. All right, so let's start out. We got about 5 minutes or so before the next break, so we're going to start through some questions I've got, but hopefully the audience will call in too. But Jay, what exactly is seller financing?
Oh, that's a great question. Seller financing, in its just simplest form, is essentially instead of going to a bank, the person that owns a home is essentially carrying the financing for the person that is buying the home. So it's often called a carry-back mortgage. Different parts of the country, it's a note and a mortgage. Other parts of the country is called a note in deed of trust, a promissory note in deed of trust, maybe a deed for bond, could be a land contract. There's various variations of it, but the bottom line is that the person that's selling the home is carrying the financing as well, is what it basically is. And it's actually a pretty large market. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, just in 2025 alone, there was 30 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars worth of seller financed paper that was created out there in 2025. That's the latest data that we have right now.
All right. So, I mean, that is great. I think it helps out a lot of buyers. Who are your typical buyers for these notes?
Yeah. I mean, it's the individuals that kind of think of the just missed, you know, as banks get tighter on their underwriting, there's more and more people that are kind of left behind. And the banks have to do what they have to do. All right. But seller financing essentially fills the gaps, all right, that the banks leave behind. So the example would be independent contractors, independent business owners, gig workers, people that have come out of a bankruptcy or a foreclosure, and they're now back on their feet. They're past that point, and now they're being able to move forward, and things are good. Life crisis things that happen, medical reasons, divorce, job loss, those types of things. They're past the crisis. They're back on their feet. They're being productive. They were good beforehand. They're good afterwards. They just are not yet to the point where they can get bank financing. And then it's just a missed borrower. All right.
It has
a good income, good down payment, but they don't check necessarily all the boxes for the bank. So those are your typical buyers.
That is an important niche that this group is filling, because there are just I know it's hyperbole, but a ton of people who need this kind of stuff. They can't they don't qualify.
They're looking for an opportunity. All right, they're good people, good hard workers. They're looking for an opportunity for someone that's going to give them that opportunity.
Yeah, I've seen countless folks are like that. By the way, I just got a note. If you want to call in for questions, don't do the 800. It's 513-772-9658. Otherwise, they will talk to you, but you will donate to the fund
drive.
You're
going to have to donate.
You're
going to
donate the fund drive. Definitely for the fund drive, then you're going to call 877-772-9658. Same thing, just different area code. And we have got 10 pairs of tickets that we want you to donate. You're gonna donate $297, and you're gonna get that pair of tickets. And that conference in the first weekend in November, that is great. If you're a real estate investor, you need to be there. End of discussion. All right, so let's do one more question. Where does seller financing work the best? Talked about a lot about a buyer, but let's talk about that. Where does it work the best?
Okay, well, it can work in any neighborhood, any market, okay? But it tends to focus really in what we would call your working class neighborhoods, your kind of your blue-collar areas,
okay.
Entry-level homes, safe and secure homes, maybe not necessarily totally fixed up, but definitely not in what we would view as being a war zone or a situation of where safety is of concern. Mm-hmm. Cosmetic repairs are fine. But then also in particular, I'll say, ethnic areas, I'm based out of Fort Wayne, and we have a fair amount of Latin American, populations in here, and also Burmese. All right. And based upon their culture, they like to do more one-on-one rather than going to banks. They like the personal one-to-one and just kind of build into their culture. So that's another area in that respect.
Okay, that's good. All right, so we are going to take a short break, and we'll be back and continue talking to Jay. All right, welcome back. So that is Thursday, November 4th, Friday the 5th, Saturday the 6th, and then the 7th. I believe I have those right on the calendar in front of me, but it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 days. There's a great hotel rate at Great Wolf Lodge. You can bring the kids. It is just going to be a great event. Did want to mention that Jay, plus about 30-plus other people, are going to be speaking at that event. So you can buy them, but we suggest for the same price, basically. You can go ahead and get two tickets for that $297 one-time pledge. You're going to do a great service and get your tickets, too. We are running, by the way, a name the theme contest where you can send your best theme ideas to askvina@gmail.com. And if we pick yours, you'll win 2 VIP tickets and 3 nights at the event hotel. And even if you contribute, we'll adjust for you. So don't worry. So don't not contribute. Contribute and get that support the station and this. So also Thursday, the RIA Cincinnati chapter meeting is this Thursday. The main topic is how I raise private money. You can register at CincinnatiRIA.com. So again, questions, 513-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. So, Jay, how do you market to buyers? How do you market to them?
Well, you know what? It's not how most people would typically think. Most people think that, you know, you're going to put it on the MLS and say, hey, we're seller financing. And there would be some deals that would happen out of that, but that's not typically where these type of buyers really hang out, okay?
Okay.
But first of all, you want to market for what you want. So what are you looking for? So what's your, you know, think with the end in mind.
Right.
So you're basically looking for an individual that's got a pretty large down payment. It's stable. All right. And so we market very heavily. When we do this, with Facebook Marketplace. We do Zillow. We do signs. We do Craigslist, all of those areas. All right. Another niche that we have used is realtors, particularly that have focused in those particular ethnic areas that they cater to them. And we tend to get really good responses when we do that. So, I think one thing that's really important is that you have your kind of the step by step process down of what a person has to go through to be able to do seller financing so that when they do inquire, they know what that next step's going to be.
Right, you're not stumbling around. You got it down
exactly
as a process. That is so important.
Yeah.
So when we create these seller notes, the seller financing, these mortgages, what are the typical terms? You know, at a bank, I've got 30 years and certain percentage. So what do the terms look like for these seller finance deals?
They can be pretty much anything what the two of you agree. Okay.
Okay.
I'll be honest. But in all reality, though, if you are looking to eventually sell part of the note or sell the entire note, you want to know, you want to create a note up front that's going to be marketable on that secondary market. So kind of the terms of the secondary market somewhat dictate as far as your ability to what you're going to need. Now, you need to understand that, all right, if these people were qualified for bank financing, they would probably get by bank financing. So they do not. So as a result, they are a higher risk. And as a result, there should be some built-in because you as the lender, you are taking a higher risk. There is built-in scenarios in there that should help protect you and reward you for the higher risk that you are taking. So typically a minimum down payment, we're typically looking for at least 10%.
Okay.
All right. We want someone that's got at least 10%. We want to know that they have the ability to save some money, that they're good managers in their on their money.
Makes sense.
The note rate is typically 9 to 12%. All right. That is depends on different parts of the country. You obviously need to be aware of what your state usury laws are in relationship to seller or I should say consumer finance. Owner occupants, what those laws are in your state. There's some states that have some unique things in there, so you need to be aware of that. We certainly like to see taxes and insurance escrowed as well. That's really, really important. And the other thing is that when you're creating this note, you know, once you create it, it's baked. Okay, so we can't go and change terms. All right, so it's gotta be created right up front. The one thing that a lot of people miss is that the borrower can pay for the servicing fee. We want to see that this note is serviced by a licensed servicing company to make sure that it's third party documented. And there's multiple reasons for that that are way beyond this discussion today.
Yeah, it does seem like it would be beneficial, especially if you're, you know, looking, if you're just starting out, to have a professional organization collecting those and handling the property taxes and the insurance payments. And I think you are just spot on with real estate tax and insurance escrowing that. Most people who get a loan from the bank for their house, they're going to do that. The bank's going to require that because they want to make sure that those things get paid. And it's much harder, it's much easier for a person to put to pay their insurance and real estate taxes in sort of a, as an installment basis, right, with their mortgage, instead of all of a sudden they've got to come up with $5,000 for property taxes. That can be tough, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So speaking of risk, how do you underwrite these borrowers? How do you figure out whether, I mean, I talked about a down payment, but how do I know they're going to pay? Yeah. They're going to pay me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of times in these types of situations, the borrowers don't necessarily have good credit scores, all right, or they have no credit score. That's quite common, all right? So the banks, they run everything based off of credit scores, and for many people, that's why they don't qualify, all right? Or if you just come out of a – you've come out of a bankruptcy, or you've just come out of a say a divorce and your credit's been trashed, all right, but you make a good income, you've got a good down payment, but you're not going to get bank financing. So this is an opportunity. So you have to look at other factors. What we're looking for when we do seller financing, we're particularly looking for a stable individual. We're looking at what their income is, their documented income. How do they make their income? How long have they been doing what they're doing? How long have they been on their, how long have they been doing their business? What's their total debt to income ratio? And we hire an outside company to pull that information together. We hire a residential mortgage loan originator to essentially do the underwriting for us. Now, the ultimate underwriter is still us or whoever the lender is going to be, all right, that's selling that particular property. You're the final person. But the residential mortgage loan originator make sure that you are compliant in giving the disclosures that you need to give, in documenting their income, documenting the household, documenting from the standpoint that they do have the financial ability in which to make the pay the mortgage on a routine basis. And this gets back to what the Dodd-Frank rules are out there. So it's really, really important. And this is how you document whether you have an individual that doesn't meet everything that the bank does, but the likelihood that they're going to perform is exceedingly high. Now, one thing that we look at particularly, we want to take a close look at what that debt to income ratio is, and we like to see that below 40% is what we basically do. That's one of our things. So there you go.
All right. So as far as if we have a deal, are there any, like, to sort of close that deal, to get it, to get it across the finish line, what kind of tips do you have to do that?
Well, there are some tips in doing the closing. You want to make sure that the mortgage, since we're talking in note in mortgage state here, I'll say that, but the same would be true for a note in deed of trust. All right, you want to make sure that the documents are written by an attorney, so that you're following state law of where it's taking place. You want to make sure that there is an owner's title policy in place, which is typically paid for by the seller of the property, and that there is a lender's title policy. And this protects everyone in case there's a defect on the title. The lender's title policy is typically paid customarily by the person that is buying the property. So doing the paperwork by an attorney makes it compliant for the state, makes sure that you're all good in that respect, and the fact that you've got the title policies in place, you're protecting the borrower, you're protecting yourself if there happens to be a defect in that respect. We close, whenever we do this, we actually close with a title company. Some states are attorney states where they close with an attorney, all right? Either is fine, but we make it just like a bank loan. That's what we do. As far as how the closing is taking place, there's a settlement that takes place. We work with the title company as the seller of the property, you have to change hats now and start thinking like a bank rather than thinking like a real estate investor. You got to think like, now, what's the things that the bank's going to do? Well, you're going to give the information to the title company as far as what the payment is, what the amortization schedule, all those types of things, and then where the first payment needs to go for them to hand to the buyer of the property, and when that first is due, and make sure that they have a copy of their amortization schedule as well. And you want to make sure that you get back all the original documents, because even though you can electronically record these, in some states, or I'm talking with the note in the mortgage here, in some states, originals are still required. So you need to make sure that you have those at all times. All right. So those are the things that help.
So I have one question. We got just a minute or so, but let's see if we can answer that. Russell sent in an email. It says, how have regulations regarding seller financing changed since the 2000s and 2010s? I'm based in Norwalk, Connecticut, and going to CT REIA. He goes to CT REIA up there. Good organization. What other sources of support? What kind of team might I want to create to get started again?
Sure. Well, the biggest change that's taken place is the Dodd-Frank rule. Okay, and the documentation there, as far as basically documenting that they have the ability to repay. You need to get yourself familiar with that. But a residential mortgage loan originator, they are familiar with that. So you're going to want to have one of them on your team. That's critically important. You're going to need to have an attorney as far as where you're working that is familiar with seller financing, note and mortgage, those types of things. You're going to want to have a licensed servicer on your team as well to collect the payments so you can still have a life outside of this.
Yeah.
All right. That's really important, you know.
Yeah.
But also to keep you compliant as far as TILA, all right, RESPA, all those types. Whenever someone creates a seller finance, you are now subject to that, and you have now become a debt collector. And there are all kinds of rules and regulations in every state that's specific to what you can and can't do in addition to the federal rules. That's why we hire the licensed servicing companies to do that to keep us compliant. The key is to make sure that they are licensed. But other than that, that's the bulk of our team is where everything stands.
Well, it's important. Jay just told us that we shouldn't go out to the buyer's house and harass them to get the payment.
No,
absolutely not. Let the servicers do that. Do not be your own collection agency. It's not a good idea. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. All right, I'm back. I'm Scott Ellsworth, sitting in for Vina Jones Cox, here with Jay Redding, an expert in mortgage notes. And Jay, we have a question right now from Thomas. He says, would you have Jay explain how a second note would be created on a seller finance deal?
Great question. Okay. The first, when we say a second note, you are having two promissory notes that are secured by the same asset. That's what is basically happening. One is for a certain amount. Say, as I had said beforehand, roughly an example would be 70% of what the sales price, or excuse me, let me back up. Say you're selling a house for $100,000. They put $15,000 down. All right. So now we're at $85,000. Okay. You, whatever 70% is, I don't know what that is off the top of my head, but I'm going to just say $70,000 would be a first, and say a $15,000 or $20,000 second is what it would be. So you create. It's the same exact. The second is created exactly the same. It's just that it's recorded in different orders. The first is recorded first, and the second is recorded second. All right, and then the two of them should equal what the total amount of the loan would would essentially be. But it's the same documents, but it's just filled out twice for different amounts is what it basically is.
So I would assume too, Jay, that by having the first be a lower LTV, in other words, if they're putting down 10% and we're doing a second that is an additional 15%, now the loan, the first mortgage, is at a better collateral. In other words, they own 75%. So that loan would be, more saleable. It would get more interest on the secondary market.
It would. Yes, it would. It's a great point, Scott, because one of the things that no investors look at, we want to see what is the amount of equity that covers, that protects us. Because when we buy a note, the ultimate backstop of the note is the value of the asset that is securing that note. In this case, it would be a single family home. I ran today some broker price opinions that we got back on some notes that we were looking at in Texas. And those prices did not come back. I mean, a couple of them were, it did not come back where we wanted to see them. Let's put it that way. A couple of them were actually upside down.
Wow.
And so as a result, we're passing on those notes. We invest from a standpoint of within our business model. We don't go above 70% our investment to valuation. We don't go to any greater than 70%. Some people go a little higher. All right. That's just our model that we use. So because we particularly like to see a lot of equity over the top, because let's face it, prices vary. Real estate prices is not stagnant. It's always moving one way or the other, and we want to make sure that we're protected in case there is a downturn that takes place in the market. We don't want a borrower to be upside down, because then if they don't have that much equity in the deal and they haven't put much down payment into the deal, it's easy for them to walk away. So that's why we want a large down payment to begin with, so they've got skin in the game. And we want to make sure that there's plenty of equity for the money that we're putting in to make sure that we are protected as well.
So that is a key point. Remember, the topic tonight is how to do seller financing right. You need to do it right because you've got to have somebody like Jay that can come along and potentially buy that or buy a partial for those exits. So you need to realize and structure it correctly. Don't create a note that is not saleable, that somebody's going to pass on because, they're over, the collateral's not good, whatever it is. So you just need to make sure you do that. And I will say that although this is not necessarily the what we're talking about as far as the Jays of the world or anybody else, but if you want to buy notes, remember, need to have your criteria. Just as Jay pointed out, right? They walked away from a couple of those notes, and that's okay. You can walk away because there are lots in there, out there that you can buy. Don't force yourself into buying something that doesn't meet the criteria that you feel that you've set. Otherwise, you're going to be sorry. I always tell people that a loan, it is better, a passbook savings loan. I think even you said this too, Jay. But a passbook savings of 1% is much better than losing your money. So make sure you do that. I can't stress that enough. People get they lower their standards, and that becomes, ends up a lot of times being their downfall. So,
that's a very, very, very good point. When we're looking at notes, we have kind of a shopping cart. We know exactly what we're looking for. Not every note fits. It could be a really good note, but it doesn't fit for what we do. And every investor is a little bit different in that respect.
All right. So let's do this. We have about six minutes maybe.
Okay.
So let's review. Essentially saying, did you structure the deal correctly? So review it for the folks that are going to create these notes sort of give them a summary.
Sure. Quick summary. Number one, need to make sure you're all into the property purchase, and if you're doing a rehab, they're all in at 70% or less than what the market value of the property is. You need to sell the property at market rate. That is doing comparisons to properties that have sold within the last 6 months. All right. So I've seen people get too happy, all right, and too aggressive and selling it over market price, and it ends up biting you if you want to sell that note, because we're going to do comparisons and find out what that value is today. Okay. So don't overdo it.
Right.
All right. Get a large down payment. Can't emphasize that enough. All right. People need to have skin in the game. You know, I will tell you the highest of all the government sponsored loans that are out here, the highest rate of foreclosure and default that's taking place right now is in FHA loans. Why do you think that's the reason?
Because
they only require 3.5% as a down payment.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are exceptions. Okay. We see people who put very little down, but they've paid for 3-4 years on time. And so now they've earned that equity in that property and they have a track record that we can go off of. All right. Underwrite the loan. Know what you're looking for. Utilize the residential mortgage loan originator. All right. And that can be an expense, that cost. It's not free, but that cost is part of the closing costs, all right, when you close the loan that the buyer will pay, all right, and make sure that you document that the residential mortgage loan originator is documenting that the borrower has the ability to repay the loan. That's the critical part. If it's an investor loan, all right, you're going to want a little bit more down payment, and you'll also want an investor or an investment affidavit essentially stating that they are stating under oath that they are not going to be living in that property.
Right.
And that's just to protect you. And if it is an investor loan, why do you want a little bit more down? The reason being is because if things get tough, do you think they're going to sacrifice their rental, or do you think they're going to sacrifice their house first?
Right.
It's going to be the rental. That's why. So you want a little more skin in the game. And then the structure itself, make sure the interest rate's between 9 and 12%. Typically, if you're in that 100, 150,000 range, you're looking at somewhere around 10, 11%, maybe 12. If you're in that upper range where you're 400, 500,000, you're looking in that 9, 10 range. So the higher up that you're going, all right, in pricing, the interest rate's a little bit lower in that range. But you kind of need to be in that range. You also want to make sure that there's a default interest rate in there so that if they do default for whatever reason, that you're guaranteed of getting a default interest rate as well. And you want to make sure that the note is serviced by a licensed servicing company, keep you compliant and keep you out of trouble. All right. Let them do the hard work. You manage the servicing company. Make sure that you're doing the formal closing, that you're doing an owner and lender's title policy, taxes and insurance escrowed, and have the servicing fee paid by the borrower. That's the one thing we see that is missed so often, and it comes right off of the monthly payment because we factor that in. And with servicing fees now being anywhere from $25 to $45 a month, that's a significant factor that can really lower the yield on the note itself, and that's all factored in.
Gotcha. So I hope you wrote everything down. If you didn't, though, remember that Jay is speaking the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th,
mm-hmm.
one of those 4 days or a couple of those days. He'll be speaking at the summit. You need to get there. It's very important that you get there. And you can go to nationalreisummit.com, get a ticket, but better, donate $297 to the station, and you'll get a pair of tickets and benefit a good cause. So, Jay, we have about a minute left. So what do I really achieve by creating a quality mortgage note? What do I achieve ultimately?
It depends on what your goal is, but you can create money now. Okay, you can make profit now. You can recapitalize. You can go do another deal, and you can create long-term cash flow. Or if you're an individual, let's say you're close to retirement, you're looking for cash flow and you have rentals, this is a great way to be able to sell your rentals. All right, push out that long-term capital gains and the depreciation recapture tax, which Scott can tell you all about in that respect, and be able to have cash flow over the years. You know, when you do a fix and flip or something like that, you get a good hit one time. A well-designed and well-executed note pays you for years on end. It is a consistent stream, and you can start stacking those one on top of each other.
Awesome. Well, Jay, I so much appreciate you taking the time to talk to our listeners and explain how to do seller financing right. So much appreciated. Thank you very much. For our audience, you've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Until next time, remember, where others just see property, we see possibility. Keep investing smart.